Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and Nigel Lockyer is the director of the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory in Illinois. He sat down with SDPB's Lee Strubinger and discussed experimental particle physics and the partnership with the Sanford Underground Research Facility.
A small mining town in the northern Black Hills is a key player in chasing the origins of the universe. The Sanford Underground Research Facility, or SURF, is in the Homestake Mine in Lead. It's host to several world-class experiments, including DUNE, the Deep Underground Neutrino Experiment. Dr. Nigel Lockyer is the director of the Fermilab National Accelerator Laboratory. He oversees some of the world's most advanced particle physics experiments to ultimately chase the farthest reaches of the universe. I'm Lee Strubinger, and Dr. Lockyer is sitting with me in the conference room of the Garage, a co-working space in downtown Rapid City. Dr. Lockyer, thanks for joining me on Innovation.
Thank you.
What you're doing, I think, is it's some pretty far out stuff. So how do you sell people on science that's really hard to comprehend? And how do you convince people that it's important?
People are naturally curious. And so when they hear about what we're doing, they think about it, they try and relate to it, and then they struggle with it, but they get some sense that something interesting is going on, and so it's not really a very hard sell.
You know, these are really big questions, mm-hmm. And you know, and sometimes daunting to even comprehend. Mm-hmm. You have to talk people down from that sometimes, or...
No, I think everybody at some point, as they're growing up, asks questions about, you know, where does the Earth come from? Where did the sun come from? Where do the stars come from? And so particle physics just takes that to the extreme and says, where does the universe come from? And how does it work? We want to understand how everything works. We're the ultimate engineers for the nature.
And please correct me if I'm wrong here, but the research you're doing falls under the umbrella of basic science research.
That's correct.
And so why should the general public really recognize the importance of basic science research?
Well, basic science is science that's done before you know what the application is. So there's various stages of scientific what you would call research, and then you do development, and then you do prototyping, and then finally you come up with something that maybe is used, it's a better toaster or whatever. But in our case, we're right at the very beginning. And so you don't know what it's going to be used for, you don't know if it's useful, but there's lots of examples in history where, you know, people have done things and they have no understanding whatsoever. So a good example is Maxwell, who was a famous Scottish scientist who modified an equation which everybody recognized was correct, but it said that electromagnetic radiation would travel through space. And that was the beginning of radio waves, but they had no idea then, that was in the 1800s, that this was going to be, you know, every day now for everybody that has a cell phone are taking advantage of that leap in understanding and in technology. So in order for technology to advance, knowledge has to advance, and then the actual work on that technology advances based on that knowledge, and then it gets somehow implemented if it's valuable. But you just look around you and everything that you see in your daily life has been a steady progression of basic science feeding into technology.
So do basic science researchers have to be comfortable in the unknown then?
Our field, particle physics, is driven by questions. So we actually prioritize our questions. We say, these are the top 10 questions we want to answer. And then, you know, as a community, worldwide community, we get together and discuss those, and everybody will agree. So, for example, in the Sanford Underground Research Facility, the DUNE experiment, Deep Underground Neutrino Experiment, that is understood throughout the world of particle physics that this is a priority, that we need to understand the neutrino. And so that's what we're aiming to do. And then what comes out of that is, maybe 40 years from now, we found out that everybody has a neutrino in their, back pocket or something that they're using for something. But until that early research gets done, you don't know. So basic researchers are happy not thinking about that next step. They like to think about the science. It's other people who follow the science say, I could use it to do this, or I could use it to do that.
During your Morning Philip conversation, you said that trillions of neutrinos pass through our body every second, and that the probability of one interacting with our bodies is like one in a lifetime. So they're very elusive. And you also said that if there are so many neutrinos out there, it must be important. I guess, could you explain that?
Well, the reason they don't interact is they're the most weakly interacting particle that exists. So if you want to think of them as really small, you could do that. So think of an atom as mostly space. There's the analogy of an atom is like a baseball in the middle of Yankee Stadium. So that's the nucleus. And then the electron is maybe one person in the stadium. So it's mostly space. And if you had a very tiny, tiny, so the neutrino is thought to be much tinier than a baseball in that analogy of a baseball stadium. So it just goes through all matter. It just goes forever. Mm-hmm. So that that explains why they don't interact very much in your body. Now, the reason that there's so many of them is a bit of a puzzle. So at the beginning of the universe, when the particles were all made, we don't have an exact or even an approximate, to my knowledge, understanding of why this many were made. You would need to understand how much energy was available for creating these particles, and so we don't know that. We just know what we see, and we say, "Wow, there's a lot more neutrinos than there are protons," and it's protons that make up people, and the Earth and the Sun and so on. The large number that comes from the sun just gives you an idea of how many neutrinos are produced in the nuclear furnace of the sun, which is burning, thousands of tons per second of fuel. And a byproduct of that is neutrinos.
Mm-hmm. I guess building off of that, part of the, as I understand it, the Dune experiment is tracing back the neutrino. Watching its oscillations and how do we trace back the neutrino via oscillations to the origins of the universe?
Oh, well, that's a hard one to answer. So let me explain what the experiment is first.
Sure.
Of all. So at Fermilab in Chicago, we produce a beam of muon neutrinos. So there's three types of neutrinos: electron neutrinos, muon neutrinos, and tau neutrinos. We make beams of muon neutrinos. However, we know that neutrinos are a mixture of the three types. And so, which one appears when you look depends on how far away you are and what the energy is. So in South Dakota, turns out the distance is perfect, where the largest number of muon neutrinos will have changed into electron neutrinos. So we will be looking for those. We count those electrons. Then we do an experiment with antineutrinos, and we count antielectrons. And we want to see if there's a difference between a neutrino and an antineutrino in that process. If that is true, we know that's an ingredient into why the early universe there was a asymmetry between the number of particles and antiparticles that were produced in the Big Bang. So roughly one in a billion protons could not find an antiproton, for example. All the other protons found an antiproton, but there was one left over. And now do that many times, and that's what your body's made out of. It's made out of the lonely protons that never found a partner to annihilate into in the early universe. But we'd like to understand that in more detail, and we think neutrinos are part of that story.
And so understanding that could lead us to some big answers, I guess, or more questions.
Usually ends up leading to more questions. So I think, you know, if we were to observe it, and this will take, once the experiment's finished, probably 6 or 7 years to get a taste of what's going on. But if we were to observe it to be maximal violated, in other words, as much as the theory could tolerate, then we would think that there's some other theory which is forcing that solution. So that would take us to the next step. We would wonder what that is. Mm-hmm. If we don't see it, we'd also scratch our heads and say, why don't we see it? And then you would have to look with greater precision. So it might require the experiment to be modified in some manner that allows you to measure it, or measure it more precisely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're listening to Innovation on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lee Strubinger, sitting with Dr. Nigel Lockyer, the director of the Fermi National Accelerator Laboratory. So if we start to understand the neutrino and really trace it back to that big question, do you think humanity would be ready for that that answer?
My observation is that big scientific discoveries, whether it's the picture of a black hole on the front page of the New York Times, or whether it's gravitational waves that the Nobel Prize was given for a year ago, these scientific discoveries capture the imagination of the public. And neutrinos are so interesting because they're so non-standard, and there's so many of them. Then people will say, well, what are they all about? Why don't you know the mass? Why is it so tiny? How can a neutrino be its own antiparticle? That would be a first. Or it's a different type of mass than we've ever observed in the universe. So there's a series of questions that come about from the study of the neutrino that I think will move people into this. Let's understand science more, which is a good thing.
I guess, what do you think needs to happen? Maybe culturally, I don't know if this is a U.S. question or if it's even a world question, where people have that basic foundation to, I mean, obviously curiosity plays a part of it, but there, it seems like there's needs to be like a basic foundation in order to like understand that and understand the experiments that are going, because they're so far ahead of maybe what, you know, we're learning in school, basic foundational stuff that you need to get to this point. I guess maybe what needs to happen in order for more engagement?
Well, there's the word understand, but there's the word appreciate. And you can appreciate something's important and something that's a breakthrough without actually knowing everything about what's going on. And so I think the fact that something so significant is happening in South Dakota, that here's this huge experiment, 70,000 tons of liquid argon a mile underground, waiting for neutrinos to come through the Earth. There's no beam pipe or anything. They just travel through the Earth, 1,300 kilometers from Chicago, to be detected here and try and understand something about nature and try and understand something about the early universe. I think everybody understands that's crazy. You know, that's really interesting. And so, you know, you can appreciate that when you hear about it. And then, you know, there are people always want to drift into, well, what's it good for? And then what you realize is that these experiments push the boundaries of technology in order to do them. We're doing things we've never done before. We're very ambitious. We, the United States, this particular Department of Energy, wants to push boundaries of what we've done in the past. And by definition, that invents new technology. You know, everyone knows the story of going to the moon and how NASA had to invent all kinds of technologies for us to get there. Well, that's the same in our field, too. We have to invent things. We have to create new things in order to do the science we want to do. And then once that knowledge is in the public domain, if you like, if it's in the companies have had to work with us to develop various things, then they use that as a product, and that's how things move forward.
Dr. Lockyer, you've been very gracious with your time. I wanted to ask one more question, which is kind of just a general update of where we're at with the Dune experiment, the up in Lead.
We're in what's called the rehabilitation pre-excavation stage. And so we're going through a two-year process of upgrading the shaft that brings either people or brings rock up from roughly a mile underground to the surface. And it's going to allow us to move it to the open cut in Lead. And so the first thing that has to happen for the experiment is we have to excavate 875,000 tons of rock and make these humongous caverns. And once those caverns are created, then we'll be installing these large freestanding structure cryostats, as we call them. Think of them as big thermos bottles that are 200 feet long and 60 feet high, 60 feet wide, and there's four of them in there. And then we'll have to put liquid argon in there. So this will be roughly 10% of the world supply of liquid argon for that year that we have to, find somewhere and transport it to South Dakota and get it underground. That all kind of takes a year. And then there's detectors that are being built all around the world that will come here and finally be installed. And then I think somewhere in the time frame of 2027, 2028, we'll be, ready to go. And at Fermilab, we're building a new accelerator. So we're in the process of testing some of the initial components for that so that we can send even more neutrinos to South Dakota free of charge. And, then the experiment will probably run, I'm guessing, for 20 or 30 years. It's really a long-term commitment to science in South Dakota. And we already have ideas on how to modify some of the experiments to search for dark matter as well. So not only would they look for neutrinos, but you could imagine looking for dark matter. So, once you get scientists in a room, they'll all have a lot of new ideas that, will have an impact. So I encourage people to learn more about it.
Fascinating stuff. Dr. Lockyer, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Nigel Lockyer speaking with SDPB's Lee Strubinger. And when we come back, we'll hear one artist's interpretation of what neutrinos sound like. This is Innovation.